When Jesus and the disciples came to the crowd, a man came to Jesus, knelt before him, and said, "Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is an epileptic and he suffers terribly. He often falls into the fire and often into the water. And I brought him to your disciples, but they could not cure him." Jesus answered, "You faithless and perverse generation, how much longer must I be with you? How much longer must I put up with you? Bring him here to me." And Jesus rebuked the demon, and it came out of him, and the boy was cured instantly. Then the disciples came to Jesus privately and said, "Why could we not cast it out?" He said to them, "Because of your little faith. For truly I tell you, if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, 'Move from here to there,' and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you." As they were gathering in Galilee, Jesus said to them, "The Son of Man is going to be betrayed into human hands, and they will kill him. And on the third day, he will be raised." And they were greatly distressed. The word of the Lord. Watching the news this week, I was taken back to some years ago, 10 years ago or so, watching the TV preacher who looked at a weather map and was not the least bit discouraged. He looked back at the camera and said, "If we pray hard enough, God will send the hurricane out to the sea and it will never touch us. We just have to have enough." Tell me, friends, do you have that kind of faith? There's another TV preacher down in Houston who's been quite successful for many years at telling people that have more faith. "If you have faith," he says, "God will make you more successful too." That's his message. And then he extends his arms toward an arena that seats 16,000 people, all of them hungry for riches and success and happy children, and most of them hungry for the recordings and books of his sermons, which are conveniently available downstairs in the church's bookstore. As one of my teachers used to say, every preacher has only one sermon and keeps preaching it over and over again. They may use different Bible texts, but there's only one sermon that they speak. I'll have to hear from you during the potluck meal if you think that's true. But it's certainly true for preachers like the one down in Houston. If only you have enough faith, God will enrich your life. But maybe you saw the news as I did. When the first big whopping hurricane hit Houston, that success preacher was a little bit slow in reaching out to people who were now homeless or flooded. And then he kept changing the story to avoid the awkwardness of what he has said repeatedly, that if you have enough faith, God will make your life well. So all of that was swirling around like a 175-mile-an-hour wind as I worked with the Bible text from today. A father was concerned about his son. The boy has a severe case of epilepsy. It is harming his life. Now, this is a first-century family. They don't have MRI machines or brain scans or medication. They don't know what to do. They hear about Jesus, but for some reason, they don't go directly to him. They go to his disciples, and the disciples can't cure him. But then they see Jesus coming to town, so the father rushes forward, falls to his knees, and spills out the whole story. And Jesus responds in a rather grumpy way, "How much longer must I put up with all of you?" Now take note. We don't know who he's talking to. Is he talking to the man? Is he talking to the family? Is he talking to the townspeople? Is he talking to the world at large? Or just the disciples? He doesn't specify. And this is the Jesus of Matthew's gospel, the one with great authority and power, the one who, Matthew says, heals everybody. So he calls the boy forward, casts out the illness, which is personified as a hostile force, and the boy is healed instantly. End of story. Except the disciples pull aside their Lord to ask, how come we couldn't do that? And the episode becomes a teaching session about faith. You don't have enough faith, he says. In fact, if you had faith the size of that little bitty mustard seed that I was talking about all summer, you could move mountains. Now, as you know, that's the verse, the single verse, that all the smiling TV preachers latch onto. And it's true, Jesus says it. It's in the book. And there are other verses in the book that sound like this one. It gives the impression that anybody with enough faith can pray away a storm or at least have their best life now. But there's just one thing to remember about this. There are other verses in the book too. In fact, in the very next verse, we hear Jesus saying, he is going to the cross. So how do we reconcile the paradox of this? The man who could heal everybody is going to be betrayed, condemned, and killed. The Lord with great power and authority will be crucified. The one who chastises his own dear ones for not having enough faith is going to suffer on the cross. How do we hold that together? It's difficult. It's really difficult if you subscribe to those who insist that faith basically is to make you successful. Years ago, Dr. Robert Schuller, bless his heart, spoke at the chapel of Princeton Seminary. The room was packed to hear that cheerful can-do preacher speak about his beliefs. And after he spoke, there was a question and answer period. One of the theology professors raised his hand and said, Dr. Schuller, tell us what you believe about the crucifixion. Without blinking, the cheerful preacher said, like every successful person, Jesus had his share of setbacks. Across the chapel, there was a unanimous groan, and for good reason. If we read the Gospel of Matthew, the cross is more than a setback. The crucifixion of the Son of God is a rejection of God himself. It is a defiant response to the man who taught us to love one another and then showed that love as he healed kids with epilepsy and fed the multitudes and forgave the sinners. To put him on the cross is to declare that regardless of whether or not you think he's a good person, we don't want him. And it's even more than that. Jesus knows the cross is the inevitable outcome of loving God in a world like this, yet he goes willingly and does not waver. And you know why that is? Because when he goes to the cross, it is a matter of faith. His faith. He trusts in God so completely, he will risk his life to do the will of God. Now imagine what kind of faith that must be, where you risk your life. Imagine what kind of faith you must have to bear the sins of the world upon your shoulders. Imagine what kind of faith you must have to face destruction, indifference, cruelty, and total darkness. As the early church would say, the world is saved through the faith of Jesus. So I guess the Bible story today reminds us that we are not free to pick a favorite verse out of the text and isolate whatever's around it. Faith like a mustard seed that moves mountains and going to the cross are connected in Matthew's heart and mind. And if we look to Jesus, we see the connection. Faith is about being faithful. It's not primarily about success. It's about doing the right thing. Faith is not about us and what we might accomplish. Faith is directed and focused upon God. It's the faithfulness of Jesus that saves the world from all brokenness. It's his faithfulness that begins the world's redemption. And it takes a good measure of growth and maturity to be able to see this. My friend Terry Chapman was in town last week. He's a Presbyterian pastor in New Jersey. He's done some mission work in Africa. A few years ago, he visited a church. His friends took him there. This place is growing. It's bustling. Everybody's there. They've got to sit on the ground. And the sermon was titled, Get God, Get Gold. The African preacher was wearing a white three-piece suit. Picture that. And he came out strutting across the stage to show off his big gold Rolex watch. I got this, he said, because I got God. So, congregation, why don't you show me how much you love God? With that, the ushers came forward with the offering buckets. People were climbing over one another to fill them with everything they had. You know, it's almost enough to make you want to go out and get your own showbiz church. Almost. And Terry said, the more people suffer through tragedy or economic and political injustice, the more vulnerable they are to this thin veneer of illusory good news covering over a vast amount of fear and greed. So what do you think God wants from us? More faith? So we can improve our circumstances, or more faithfulness to become more like Jesus. As scholars reflect on the Gospel of Matthew, they see more here than a biography about the Lord. They see the invitation to become his disciple, to study him, to imitate him, to do what he says, particularly when you see him doing it himself. It starts as early as the Sermon on the Mount. Love your enemies and do good to those who persecute you. So says the one who shows us what that looks like. Matthew's gospel is a manual of discipleship, a textbook for true faithfulness. In it, we find the invitation to feed the multitude, give a cup of fresh water to the thirsty, heal the sick, visit the castaway, love those otherwise considered disposable, pay attention to the littlest ones, give money to the needy, and pray at all times. Now that is faith. That is faithful. And we all need more of it. Because the life of faithfulness is an invitation to bring every aspect of our lives under the obedience of a sovereign God. It really does matter to whom we bind our hearts, how we spend our money, and how we treat our parents. It matters that we belong to God before we bow down to any emperor du jour or anybody else. Even in this Gospel of Matthew, which normally treats the disciples of Jesus with kid gloves, here we're reminded that his very disciples were far from ever being finished. As good as they were, they did not have their act together sufficiently to heal as Jesus healed, which means that they need to grow in faith, more faith, more little itty-bitty mustard faith, which I take to mean faithfulness. Because in the long run, life doesn't really depend on how good we are. We'll never ourselves be that good enough. Life depends on how good Christ is, how faithful he is in doing God's mission to the world. And if he is that good and he is that faithful, we can trust him and we can live like him. And that's what this church is all about. We begin our fall program together, whether it's worship, whether it's service, whether it's worship through service, whether it's singing, or especially this week, if it's Christian education. At the heart of it all is the invitation to live the life of Christ. So let me encourage you to be part of all this, of what we're trying to do here. On Wednesday evenings, it's discipleship night. We have a great group of people come into classes and choirs, and there is always room for plenty more. Our goal is to move from being observers and watchers to participants, to move from being like the disciples in our text who feel inadequate to those who serve God with dedication and joy. That is our continuing invitation, to help us all move from the selfishness of our culture toward a God-centered life of service and praise. It is a journey to become faithful, just like Jesus. I'm ready for the journey. How about you?